This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonantoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome in, everybody. Fresh week of shows on the Lombardi Line as we welcome you to our downtown Las Vegas Circa Sportsbook studio. Stormy Bonantoni is off hanging in Maui. I'm Ben Wilson, in for Stormy next few days. So pumped to be back, though, with Michael Lombardi from the East Coast. And it is a first football week of the 2024 season. Michael, a few days away from the Hall of Fame game, and I am very excited to be back with you all week.
Love it. Yes, it's good to have you back. And it's so perfect timing, considering you're a Packer fan, and I had a discussion with another Packer fan, Big Daddy, about the Jordan Love contract, and I can't wait to hear your reaction to it and what you think of it all as a Packer fan moving forward, knowing that you've had these quarterback in a row luck that you've had.
It is definitely luck. I will not make any boasts about saying that. I was just back in my home state of Wisconsin. I had some lovely Cops frozen custard last week. Yes, and I was thinking of Big Daddy while I was while I was back there. That is a big topic for us, as we'll start off the show with that. Also excited to get on a couple great guests coming up, both in this hour, 1:30 Eastern. Jim Nagy, Senior Bowl Executive Director, will join the show. We'll also go out, start some burning question previews for some AFC top contenders with Michael, and to help us do that, Richard Skinner, sports anchor in Cincinnati, joins us 1:45 Eastern to talk the state of the Cincinnati Bengals. But that was, Michael, the big news over the weekend, and you go back really even to Friday when Dolphins quarterback Tua Tagovailoa signs his four-year extension. We knew it would happen shortly thereafter for Jordan Love, and his is made official, 4 years, $220 million. Thought what was most interesting about it, though, was just the initial reaction and how Love has consistently, and this is from whether you are inside the building in Green Bay, whether you follow the team closely, or if you're just a casual observer, I think what has stood out to me the most, Michael, is how Love has handled himself, really, since being the successor to Aaron Rodgers, how he has talked so candidly about the pressure that a rabid fan base like Green Bay commands. And here's what Love had to say after that deal was made official and Love ended his hold-in back in training camp over the weekend.
Just being an NFL quarterback, there's always pressure. I mean, you say being a first-round pick, there's pressure. Become the starter, there's pressure. But there's always pressure. And I think that's, you know, part of the job that, you know, we sign up for. You got to find ways to deal with that pressure and handle as best you can to be the best player you can be every day, and be able to show up and kind of block all the noise out, block the pressure out. And that's kind of goes into mental, how you can, you know, handle some of the stuff that's thrown at you, and just try and be at your best every day. But there's always pressure. There's no hiding that. But I don't think this, you know, I've been in some pretty pressure situations, so I think there's always going to be that, but just find a way to navigate through this and handle it as best I can.
And for starters, Michael, it's where the whole thought of people wanting to push back on Jordan Love's extension, saying, well, it's been 1 year. It's done it 1 year. A comment like that, it really, to me, reflects how he's been in the building now basically a half decade. He's had all this time to learn, to grow mentally, to mature physically, and also be so solid between the ears, especially with how rough his first full season as a starter went the first 5-6 games. A guy who did not even look like the same person as the guy I saw in person at Allegiant Stadium week 8 on a Monday night against the Raiders, in which it seemed like he couldn't complete anything more than about 10 yards down the field. That, to me, is the bigger indication of growth for Jordan Love, and why, as much as you can make the argument, well, it's only 1 year, I'm still a believer that based on the time, the situation, the parameters of where the roster was at, this was the only decision and the right decision for the Packers to make.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was going to be a longer-term contract. I thought they were going to go 8-9 years in. I thought they were going to go to the end of the CBA, but obviously they didn't. My question is, and I think you put it really well, and it eliminates me from asking, but had he had it flipped, had those 4 years of service as a backup or working started out really well and then faded, if he would have had the second half of the season as the first half and the first half as the second half, would we be talking about this contract? And the answer is probably no. But once he kind of got it, like once he got his feet on you, and that Raider Monday night game to me was one where I felt like Matt LaFleur was not going to let Jordan Love beat the Packers. They ended up losing, but he wasn't going to let the quarterback beat him. He ended up beating him anyway. He ended up throwing an interception and it cost him the game. But to me, you know, I think this is risky, right? But I think it's risky, but it was a risk worth taking because what's their alternative? They've got him. He's still going to be relatively young when he comes up for his next contract. And they've got 3 years to see what he can do, 4 years to see what he can do and prove it to him. But they're high on him, and he's got to play better than he did against Green Bay, against the Giants, and he's got to play better than he did in the fourth quarter against San Francisco.
100%. It sets up a very fascinating poll question that is now live on Michael's Twitter, M. Lombardi NFL, where we are talking about the quarterbacks who now, from the 2020 NFL draft, have gotten their second deals, their extensions. It's on the wake, too, of the deal we saw for Tua Tagovailoa. We'll first play the soundbite from Tua, because he was also asked now, okay, what's next? You finally got the deal done. All the speculation's over. What can we expect going forward?
What's next for you? Like, what's the best part about having all this done and kind of looking forward to the next, you know, hopefully get this organization that playoff win and the bigger picture, winning it all?
That's exactly what it is. That's exactly what we're looking forward to. Now that all of this is done, this is behind us. We know, like, heavy is the crown, you know? So whoever's wearing that, like, right now, I'm the highest paid employee in this office. Like, I mean, I got to get my, you know, whatever together. I got to get that right and get our guys moving in the direction that we need to go, you know, to be able to do those things.
Two, it's okay. You can drop an F-bomb if you want. You can pay the fine. You've got 4 years, $212.5 million on the extension. Don't worry about being so nice. Anyway, leads into Michael, our poll question of the day, up on your Twitter right now. Besides Joe Burrow from the quarterback class of 2020, who just re-signed with all of these different extensions, to a 4 years, just over $212 million on the extension. Justin Herbert, 5 years, over $262 million. Love the 4 year, $220 million extension. And Jalen Hurts, 5 years, $255 million. Which would you rather have for the next 4 years? Honestly, it's a fascinating question, because at first glance, I know for sure it's going to be really tight as far as that decision. And there are pros and cons to each of these QBs. What is your first thought on this?
Well, you know, there's a lot of good fan bases in here that come out and vote, right? It's a little bit like American Idol. You know, you're going to have to carry the Southern primaries to win this thing, and Philly yeah. Eagle fans will vote, Packer fans will vote, right? You know, you couldn't be an American Idol if you didn't have great voting behind you. It's one of why Taylor Hicks won it, because he had all the Southern votes coming in his direction. I think this is going to be an obsolete question after a year of Jim Harbaugh and Justin Herbert together. The most talented person on that list, the most naturally gifted quarterback, the one who can do more than anything is Justin Herbert, without a question, in my mind, from a scouting standpoint. Now, he's made too many mistakes. He's not been able to kind of win the close games. A lot of it is the decision-making by the great Brendan Staley as he went through it. But to me, I think in a year with Harbaugh, the way Harbaugh coaches the quarterback, coaches the team, he'll be the easy choice. And then after that, I think it really is debatable. I mean, it's interesting. We talked about this on the podcast, Ben. When you look at Jalen Hurts' numbers and you see the trend of RPO numbers going way down in the league, you know, 2 years ago, he was at 1,100 yards on RPO. Last year, he was down to 600 passing yards. People are defending the RPO game much better. Now, Tua's RPO game, they don't. His RPO game is so uniquely different because of the receivers. But the rest of the league, this RPO game is drifting way down. And I think that's we're going to have to see what Hurts can do as he rallies around that and changes his game a little bit. His play-action pass numbers went significantly down. Mm-hmm. People forced him into being that drop-back passer, because 2 years ago they had 204 points scored in the second quarter. They got the lead on everybody. So I think that's going to be an interesting one to talk about. Obviously, Tua has the best receiver in all of football. I don't care what anybody says. He makes a difference. He scares everybody to death, and that's why that RPO game is so effective. And, you know, and I think Love is going to just be steady, steady, steady with some really good talent around him.
What also goes into that, you talk about the future of the way the game is going, and that's a very important question to posit, Michael, on this topic. It's the idea of, are you okay and believe that where the most optimal strategy going forward for quarterbacks is pushing the ball further down the field, the higher guys as far as air yards, average depth of target, even if your success rate is a little bit lower, just because the likelihood of you hitting on one of those big plays is so much more advantageous, even if you are maybe risking yourself, opening yourself up to turnovers. When you look at it from that perspective, you know, last year, Jalen Hurts and Jordan Love, they tied for the third highest air yards in the NFL. And that's been the big knock on Justin Herbert, as air yards in poor offensive systems continue to go down and down and down. That, to me, is the fascinating part of all of this, because clearly And Hurts has been willing to take the big shots. And his passing numbers deep have been a lot better than I think most people would have expected for a guy who came out as a predominant run-first quarterback. It's why I, weirdly, of all these, I would actually lean toward Hurts if you made me pick all four of these. If we're saying offenses are equal, well, I still do value the multi-positional versatility as a running quarterback, even if what you said is true, Michael, about the RPOs. Air yards, to me, that does matter in today's day and age, and I certainly believe that only being more of an emphasis going forward.
Yeah, but I think when you look at – when you really study Hertz's numbers and you look at and air yards, I think that's an important stat. But when you examine what he's been not able to do last year, when you just look at yards per attempt, which to me is the most critical number, he was at 8.0 2 years ago with that RPO game. Last year, he's down to 7.2. To me, that is the number that matters more than anything. That's where Trevor Lawrence, Daniel Jones, when you're down there at that 7.1 number – you're not going anywhere. And as you said really well, you got to throw the ball down the field to get there. You got to make explosive plays. I mean, people want to make fun of Brock Purdy. The guy averaged averaged 9 yards per attempt. There were parts of the season he was almost at 10 yards per attempt. Every time he attempts a throw, it's almost 10 yards. That's remarkable. So I think you've got to be really take a look at that and examine that, because I do think the RPO game is affected. That's why I think Hurts will, but he's got some big play receivers, guys that are very good with it after the catch. And I think Herbert could improve in that area as well. Look, you know, we talk about Mike Williams being a deep threat. We haven't seen Mike Williams play a full season in forever.
100%. It is such a good point, too, because on the Brock Purdy front, people think, yeah, this guy just dumps it off and his receivers do the rest. Dude was top 10 in air yards last year. Not afraid to push the ball down the field. That is such a big part of quarterbacking in the NFL. Fascinated to see where these poll results go. I will make my vote. I will go a tepid vote for Jalen Hurts as of right now, as we have a lot more to get to when we come back. We will talk some burning questions in the AFC starting Cincinnati.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
We're releasing our VSiN College Football Betting Guide this Thursday. This guide is your ultimate resource for the upcoming college football season, including previews of all 134 teams, a preseason top 25, power ratings, proven betting systems, and more. And if you sign up before the end of July, you receive both the college football and NFL betting guide, plus full VSiN Pro access to our daily pro picks, 24/7 video, exclusive data like our betting splits all the way through the Super Bowl at an early bird discount price of just $175, or sign up on a monthly subscription. Get your first 30 days for only $19 to see everything VSiN has to up your betting game. Do not miss out on these preseason deals. Visit VSiN.com/subscribe to sign up today. That is VSIN.com/subscribe. I'm very excited. I'll be hosting our college football betting guide release show with our Adam Burke coming out on Thursday, right after, right after our show here, Michael. Actually, right before our show. It'll be leading into us on Thursday. Awesome. So that's a great day. Thursday, calendar turns to August, Hall of Fame game, college football betting guide officially out. And what is also out now, your poll here, Michael.
I've been doing some prep work on college football. I didn't realize Kentucky had so many guys that are pro prospects coming next year. You know, it'd be interesting to see if they get quarterbacking play, but offensive linemen, I mean, they've got a lot of guys on their team that, you know, that they could be really good next year. So it'd be interesting to see the guide and how it all stacks out.
100%. I got very lucky that I had a Kentucky over last year, and they needed to win as 7-point dogs on the final day to get over that. But again, another team getting a lot of interest on the over win total market this year, Kentucky. We'll have all that breakdown coming up later. Also, Jim Nagy, a guy who knows a thing or two about evaluating talent at the college level, director of the Senior Bowl, going to join us, give us a preview of some of the NFL rookies to watch out for this year, some thoughts on the rookie of the year markets as well, both offensive and defensive. Jim joins in about 15 minutes. Your poll is up here, early returns, and I, as a Wisconsin, I had to vote for Jordan Love, even though I did make the case for Hurts last segment.
Of course you
did. It's all Herbert so far, over 60% of the vote. I will have this open here through the rest of the show, but love for Tua so far. He is at the caboose right now, Michael.
You know, I mean, look, they've done a good job of marketing that. Remember, Tank for Tua was the program. They should have taken Herbert, although the Chargers would have. It would have been interesting if Herbert were playing in this offense in Miami and Tua was playing in the Charger offense with Kellen Moore last year. Now, Herbert was actually better with their offensive numbers were better with Joe Lombardi than they were with Kellen Moore last year. Offensive line injuries, they've had some running back injuries, receiver injuries. But you know, to me, so much of this is situational. I think if Jalen Hurts doesn't go to Philly, where Philly has a really good plan on how they're going to develop him, he might not have been the same player. I mean, they took him. They believed in him, starting with the owner, Jeffrey Lurie, and they developed him, and they came up with a system of offense that was conducive for him. But I would throw a little bit more cold water on him too, Ben, in this sense. His eye level, you know, people in the league, when you watch tape on Jalen Hurts, he was getting a lot of pressure from his right hand, the defensive left, and forcing him to run to his left and creating negative plays that way, or throwing the ball away or that. Because if you remember, Nick Bosa saying, we saw his eye level come down, and he's got a really good offensive line. So that's got to get corrected this year.
Speaking of offensive lines, and it is a very good point, we use that to transition into our first team with burning questions today. We want to focus on some of the top contenders here in the AFC, Michael, because it's not like Miami is the only team that is facing a question at offensive line, supporting a quarterback also from that 2020 draft class, and it is the Cincinnati Bengals. We'll talk some more Bengals here coming up with Richard Skinner later on in the hour from Cincinnati, one of the local sports anchors there. But that, to me, is the biggest question. You did your burning questions right now. I've circled a few here. We won't have time to go through all five, but that, to me, is number one. First and foremost, when you have a team that allowed 50 sacks last year, and the, you know, the early reports as far as where this O-line ranks, 1 to 32, kind of all over the place. I've seen some publications have Cincy as low as 21. I've seen others that say this has top 10 upside. It's hard to know on that as far as all the injuries and the attrition that they've had, as well as veterans that they are attempting to bring in and get integrated into the system. Where do you stand on that? Because I find myself a little bit unconvinced as of right now on Cincy.
Well, I think a lot of Cincinnati is you have to be concerned about their offensive line in the sense the right tackle position, right? So you know that's an issue. Whether it's going to be Mims or Brown, I don't know. But, you know, one of the things they've been able to do is they've gotten away with Orlando Brown at left tackle, because what I don't think people truly understand, when you have a quarterback who's got a great sense of rhythm and timing, he won't hold the ball. Last year, this team ranked 23rd in sack percentage. Because Browning played a lot of games, and Browning wouldn't get rid of the ball. I mean, look, they went on the road with backup offensive linemen and beat Tennessee in Tennessee. Remember that game? Then they travel up to Buffalo, and they beat Buffalo soundly with the backup offensive line. Because Burrow got rid of the ball. He took some sacks in the Tennessee game that you would say, why would you do that? Those are negative plays. Yet the kicker, Evan McPherson, was tremendous in making kicks that year. So they'll overcome this. If the right tackle is good enough, and if they change formations, which that's the word out of Cincinnati, this has been an 11-personnel team completely. But I think they are going to change into more 12 and try to get those edges protected a little bit more to help out and keep Burrow healthy.
As far as the health, too, and we'll talk more with Richard coming up as far as the early reports from training camp, coming back from Burrow's injury and all of his rehab, you know, the Orlando Brown piece of it, too, when you are aging as a blindside protector, that's a big question mark I have. And it also goes into these early starts we've seen Cincinnati. You go back to a couple years ago retooling their offensive line, even in the Super Bowl year. I mean, it was ugly starting out. Remember, they were, what, touchdown favorites, losing outright to Pittsburgh in a game where the offensive line was in shambles after all that investment. And that's the other thing you have to wonder now. It's another one of your burning questions, I think, is really spot on here, where under Zach Taylor, it's been a slow starting group. You look at 0-4 first 2 weeks, the last two seasons. What do we expect, and how will they approach camp differently, if at all, when you consider how bad the starts have been in a division where you can't really afford to get off the slow starts, needless to say?
No question. Yeah, I agree that completely. With the North, you don't want to do that. I'm told they're going to ramp it up. He's going to play his starters a little bit more. But again, you're right. That offensive line. Look, Pittsburgh gained 156 yards in that game. Remember that? But Burrow was turned over for a touchdown. And, you know, the game went to overtime. But the Steelers were able to come out of there with a win with no offense at all, led by Mitchell Trubisky at quarterback. So, yeah, they can't start that way at all. They can't. They have to start faster in the North. And I think they understand that. And hopefully they'll keep Burrow from having a calf injury like he did last year and get that line fixed. But with Trent Brown, if Trent Brown wants to be a good player, if he wants to put his mind to it, he could be one of the best right tackles in football. The problem is he doesn't always want to be the best right tackle in football.
Other burning question for Cincinnati. It's what the hell happened to the pass defense last year? We were so high on Lou Anarumo as this vaunted defensive coordinator. outstanding at making in-game adjustments. And then last year happens, where the secondary was worse than everybody as far as pass yards per attempt given up. They have made some changes, although you would still say, if you're comparing front seven to secondary, I would still argue that the front seven is still better than the secondary at this point. But at the very least, you add Geno Stone in free agency. Von Bell is now back in that secondary. And the question becomes, will we see a return to 2 years ago here with Cincy? And how much will they get better from the secondary position that really exposed them a lot last year?
Yeah, and look, they couldn't stop the run either. Every time a team ran the football, now they were 15th in rushing attempts to gain against them, but 30th in average per attempt. I mean, they couldn't stop the run. They couldn't stop the pass. Now, part of the reason, too, it's one of the things that I think might you have to keep an eye out on Buffalo is without Buffalo having Pryor and Hyde, you're a defensive system like Buffalo.
We'll have to reset Michael here because he's making an amazing point on Cincinnati, but his connection just went. That's where, too, so the Bengals, at least secondary-wise, that's where I try to look at all these different positional rankings across different publications, but it's where there's a lot of disagreement with a lot of very respected outlets where, and this is even taken into account the secondary, where I've seen some as high as a top 15 unit on Cincy. Others I've seen ranked, I'm just pulling up some of these right now, down to about 25th. It's why for me, look, Cincinnati, I would tell you top to bottom have arguably the best quarterback in the division, whether you want to quarrel with Burrow versus Lamar Jackson for the best quarterback in the AFC North. Regardless, it's a 1A, 1B situation. Outside of that, though, purely on roster, Cincinnati, to me, third best roster in the AFC North. Now, the schedule's much more favorable this year since you get to play the bottom of the division schedule. You have your quarterback back fully healthy. You would figure, because of that, they will be in a very good position to succeed. But in a division where the power ratings are so close, I certainly believe Cleveland should be getting much more, at least respect, but they aren't because of the struggles of Deshaun Watson at quarterback, whereas this love and automatic assumption that Cincinnati will make that leap all the way back to being basically the co-favorite as they are right now with Baltimore to win the division is a little bit putting cart before the horse. I think Michael had some really, really good burning questions to tackle as to why that is the case. And Michael's back. All right, we got 30 seconds. Glad we got your connection back here. You're just talking a little bit on the defense there, Michael, before we hit a break.
Well, I mean, I think it's really important to have guys who can make the checks. Micah Hyde and Pryor and Buffalo did all the call checks, so they got him in the right scheme. Last year, with two rookies playing in the back end for Cincinnati, they blew more coverage than they needed to.
Absolutely. We'll have more burning questions at Cincinnati. We'll talk Baltimore in a little bit, but up next, Jim Nagy, outstanding voice in the college football world. He is the director of the Senior Bowl. We'll join us next to talk some NFL rookies to watch out for on the other side.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Rolling on this Monday edition of the Lombardi Line, I'm Ben Wilson in for Stormy from downtown Las Vegas. Michael Lombardi here. We're about to go out to our progressive guest line, catch up with one of our pals, Jim Nagy. Some quick breaking news, though, Michael, before we do that. Danico Autry suspended 6 games for the Texans for violating the PED policy in the NFL. Big news there out of Houston for a projected starter on that D-line.
Yeah, no question. I mean, look, Ben, I think when you look at Houston's defensive numbers, they're not as pretty as people suspect. I mean, I know everybody has them running away with the South and doing all this, and they could build off of last year. But I think when you really peel back their numbers, especially in the passing game where they were trying to play defensively, you couldn't run the football on them. It was very difficult. They were in an 8-man front. But to get pass rush and to get, they're 27th in the National Football League in yards allowed per attempt. That's typically not good enough.
And it's a defense that has a lot of question marks. We've talked burning questions today. We'll do some more with Houston, but that's the big news of the day here, just breaking with us. This happened about 5 minutes ago from Deanna Russini there of The Athletic. Fortunately, Jim Nagy, he gets to just evaluate the college players. He doesn't have to worry about managing rosters, guys filling PED tests. Jim joining us right now here as the week of the Hall of Fame game ramps up. So nice to have Jim on our progressive guest line right now. Give him a follow at @JimNagy_SB. Always great to catch up, sir. And it's that time of year here where we're trying to take a look at rookies in camp, seeing who is catching our eye. I'm fascinated just from your perspective as an evaluator. For some of these rookies, what are you looking at early, first couple weeks of camp, that makes you believe they have done the offseason prep, they have come in and are ready to go here right away without much of a learning curve needed, at least in the camp portion?
Yeah, good morning, guys. I was trying to do some research this morning, just hitting up some friends around the league to make sure who's doing well and who's not. I mean, you can read reports coming out of camps, and Mike knows this. I mean, there's a lot of really good beat writers out there that do a great job, but it doesn't always mean what's being printed out there is jives with what the team feels about a young player. I would say one guy that I'm excited to really see is Bo Nix in Denver. I felt like when it happened, it was kind of the perfect marriage of head coach and quarterback. Not comparing him to Drew Brees, but a lot of the same traits that made Drew successful in Sean Payton's offense. We know Bo has those things. He can get the ball out quick. He's decisive. He's accurate. He's a good decision maker. And again, well, we'll see. The guy started 60 college games. If he's not NFL ready to get on the field, I don't know who is. They're kind of touting that thing as a three-man race with Jarrett Stidham and Zach Wilson in Denver. But, you know, just talking to the guys in Denver, I would be surprised if it's not Bo Nix. And I'll be curious to see what he looks like coming out of the chutes here week one.
Yeah, I mean, I think Sean Payton's all in on Bo Nix. I don't think there's any question about that. I mean, it would take a miracle, I think, for those guys to beat him out if he had to. What have you heard out of we see Hard Knocks and we watch the Giants, but, you know, you see these clips on Twitter about Malik Nabers. What have you heard out of the Giants?
Well, they're excited. They've got a playmaker, a legit playmaker, Mike. And, you know, and Daniel Jones has taken a lot of criticism over the years. And again, that hasn't been me. I've been a believer, you know, to a point in Daniel. And they've never been really good around him. You know, it's really hard to evaluate a quarterback when you don't have an offensive line, you don't have skill people. And, you know, over the course of Daniel's career, his most consistent playmaker on offense, you know, barring the injuries that, you know, have forced Saquon out at a lot, it has been Darius Slayton. You know, how do you evaluate a quarterback properly? And there's no knock on Darius Slayton, but if that's your most consistent playmaker, you're obviously not good enough around him. Now they've got a guy that's kind of a big play waiting to happen. And he has looked, I saw Joe Shane at the Manning camp. He was there this summer. He sent his son to the camp for like the last 3 years. It's a good way for NFL guys to backdoor their, you know, they're not supposed to be at the Manning camp, but if they have a child who's a camper, they can get in. And I can just go off what Joe said, not so much what we've seen here in training camp, but what they saw in the offseason program is that he's exactly what they thought he would be in terms of a guy that can get open, make plays down the field, and make plays after the catch.
He is Jim Nagy, longtime NFL scout, current executive director for the Senior Bowl. Malik Nabers, if you're wondering, by the way, 20-1 and offensive rookie of the year, as we're talking some rookies to watch here for this upcoming season with Jim. Help us kind of parse together and compare the two guys who are the front runners right now for defensive rookie of the year. You have Dallas Turner, expected to do big things in Minnesota system under DC Brian Flores, coming out of Alabama, and Laiatu Latu is the second favorite going to the Indianapolis Colts. What have you made of their games? Certainly different positions, but certainly guys who are expected to have major impacts right away as rookies.
Yeah, well, to me, when you look at guys that could potentially be rookies of the year, they're NFL-ready players. And that's, to me, that's Laiatu Latu. If you sat in draft meetings last year and wanted to argue that, you know, Latu was kind of at his ceiling and he was what he was, I would hear that argument. But my counterpoint would be, yes, but he's NFL-ready and he's a double-digit sack guy right now. The guys in Indy are fired up about him. I just hit a guy up with the Colts today. They haven't been in pads yet. So I think today might be the first padded practice. So we'll see. And then I know what Brian Flores can do, you know, with his fronts and creating pressure packages. So it's not Dallas can win one-on-one. He certainly can. And he's going to be able to do that. But to me, like with different blitz packages, with him coming off, you know, you saw what they did last year with Ivan Pace Jr., an undrafted free agent who's a heck of a blitzer. I'm just excited to see what Flo can get going with an athlete like Dallas Turner. He's an incredible athlete, and Flo will devise a lot of things to get him to the quarterback.
You're close to, you know, you're down there in Mobile, Atlanta. I mean, how's Michael Penix handling the fact that he knows he's not going to play for the next 3 years?
Yeah, it's hard for any competitor, Mike, but I mean, you know, he's got to handle this situation the right way, just like Kirk Cousins has to handle it the right way. It's delicate. Like this was really kind of a forced marriage, right? I mean, I think we all saw what came out in the, you know, aftermath of the draw and draft weekend. And, you know, Mike McCarthy, his agent wasn't, you know, Kirk's agent wasn't totally pleased with the draft pick. And I'm sure Michael and his group were probably hoping they would go to a situation that was more of a clear path to being an opening day starter. So, you know, it's hard on all those guys, but it seems from the outside looking in that they're all handling it the right way. They're being mature about it. But yeah, if you're Penix, we'll see in the preseason, but I've heard good things coming out of their camp is that, again, just talking to the coaching staff, a couple of the guys were really high on him coming out and really pounding the table for him. He's another guy where he is what they thought he was.
Jim Nagy with us right now on our Progressive Guest Line, breaking down some NFL rookies. Also talking some of the big prospects to watch in this year's college football season. We have our college football betting guide coming out on Thursday as the calendar flips to August. Big move here over the last couple months, Jim, on Dylan Gabriel to win the Heisman, who's now the favorite out of Oregon in that same system that we saw put up massive numbers for Bo Nix, video game type numbers there last year. Who are a few prospects that you've got your eyes on, you're really excited about on the college ranks this year, who you expect to see in the Senior Bowl come next early spring?
Yeah, you know, Dylan, and we talked about Bo Nix and all those starts. I think if Dylan starts every game and plays in a playoff game, he'll break Bo's record. You know, that'll be like 61 starts for him. But just some names. I was trying to think of some names for you guys that maybe are a little bit off the radar. There's a running back, Ashton Jeanty at Boise State, who is a phenomenal back, as good as there is in this draft, in my opinion, right now, especially in the passing game. He was he's from the state of Texas. He's from the Dallas area. How he got out of, SMU and TCU's backyard, I don't know how that happened. But he was a high school wide receiver. And this dude in the pass game is really fun to watch. There is a do-it-all player, Dylan Bell at Georgia, who's lined up in the backfield at running back. He's done some quarterback stuff, really explosive receiver. He is one of those guys, when you just look at the stats from last year, they do not paint the picture because the production was very modest, and Mike knows this. And then you put on the tape and you see the playmaking ability. You're like, wow, they were just, that's just a situation where they had to spread the ball around. Dylan Bell is the first, he's a top 50 player. And I think he only had about 300 yards receiving last year. And then the last one I'll leave you with is Nick Scourton. He's a pass rusher from Purdue, transferred to Texas A&M. This is a big time get. He's 6'4". They list him at 280 pounds. He's coming off the edge. Again, this is a lofty comparison, and I'm not saying this guy's going to be the number one overall pick in the draft, but just going back over the players I've scouted over the years, the size of, the combination of size and fluidity and body control and body coordination as a rusher, he reminds me of Mario Williams. So, again, he had 10 sacks last year in the Big Ten. Incredible get for the Aggies. Right now you're seeing him in, kind of in some late first round mock drafts and whatnot. I think this dude's going to have a heck of a year down there in College Station.
We only got about a minute, Jim, but I think people are sleeping on Jalen Milroe. I think he got better as the year went on. And I think obviously with Caden DeBoer, it could be big for him like Michael Penix.
Yeah, Mike, I'll try to be succinct here. I've talked to some scouts this year that have been critical of Jalen Milroe. I was there in the Texas game, and then to see the progress over the course of the year, I remind guys, like, listen, fellas, like, remember what everyone was saying about Lamar. I was in Seattle and we were in the draft room in Seattle. We did talk about Lamar as a wide receiver. So that's, to me, just remind yourself, like, yes, is Jalen the finished product as a passer right now? He's not, but he's a fun player to watch. And I'm with you, Mike.
Milroe 15-1 right now to win Heisman, year one of Kalen DeBoer in Alabama. Always great to catch up with Jim Nagy. Follow him at @JimNagy_.
Thanks, Jim.
SB. Really appreciate it, Jim.
Appreciate you guys. Thank you.
We will transition, talk a little AFC North when we come back. Some Cincinnati Bengals on the docket. Richard Skinner joins us from Cincy right after this on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Right now, check out our brand new look at VSiN.com. It's optimized for mobile and has all sorts of best bets, betting splits, exclusive articles, odds by state, betting tools, and betting guides. Check out our full breakdown, best bets in Major League Baseball for today with our senior editor, Adam Burke. And if you want some Olympic betting action, Wes Reynolds has a full breakdown on the Olympic golf. Zach Cohen with daily tennis breakdowns from Roland Garros as well. Hard not to get emotional today watching Rafa and Novak Djokovic, possibly for the final time there at the Olympic tennis today as we welcome you back. Final segment of hour number one with Michael Lombardi. I'm Ben Wilson in for Stormy. Not much sleep going on this time of year, Michael, when you get the Olympics and you get these early events, but I want one more room for Rafa.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah, I know. You got to be up on it there, Ben. You got to keep it. It's tough, you know. You got to get it through it, you know.
100%. Well, and especially now that preseason will start Thursday officially with the Hall of Fame game. We are fully in football season, and we have more to talk about. We started off the show talking some burning questions here, Michael, on the Cincinnati Bengals. We will go into your next team, which is the Baltimore Ravens, in our second hour. But in lieu of that conversation on the Bengals, and also with what's going on in camp right now where Ja'Marr Chase is not practicing, we want to go out to our Progressive guest line and get some insights from somebody who knows the team very, very well, and that is Richard Skinner, a great, great sports anchor there in Cincinnati. You follow him at Local 12 Skinny on Channel 12 in Cincinnati as he joins us to talk some Cincinnati Bengals. It's funny, too, how when teams don't really say anything publicly, team nor player, we don't technically know where to go, but you're right there. You kind of can help us cut between the BS and get to the bottom of what's actually happening here. What can you view as being the latest there as far as the Ja'Marr Chase situation and what to expect now the rest of training camp?
Yeah, they're about to practice in about a half hour, and I would fully anticipate this will be day five that he doesn't practice. Just to set the stage, I'm sure you guys are aware, that listeners may not be, this is the last year of his initial rookie contract, four-year rookie contract. They did pick up his fifth-year option next year, so he's under team control for 2 years, but he sees his former LSU teammate Justin Jefferson get paid and get paid mega-guaranteed money, and there's no question he deserves along those lines at some point. I think he feels like he deserves that right now. The Bengals are not very keen on giving guaranteed money other than signing bonus money to anybody other than the quarterback. They gave a little bit to A.J. Green when he got extended in 2015. And so I think that's where our impasse is. And he has not really talked to us. We did ask him, is this contract related? He just said no comment. And I mean, it's a hold in. It is what it is. I guess, and Mike, you've been in this situation. I don't understand what the end game would be for him here unless he's prepared to sit out the season, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's almost like, what's the sense of picking up the fifth-year option if you're going to let guys just not play to the option year? I mean, the reason you have it is because you get the fifth year in the deal, and now people are throwing it away. If you count Jefferson's fifth year in the deal, it's a $32 million extension. If you count the fifth, if you count all the new money, then it's 32. And so, like, what's the sense of having the fifth year? I would suspect, knowing Mike Brown, that there's got to be a cutoff date here. Mike Brown doesn't just let you hang around and not work. And I know they don't want to upset Chase and they're trying to pay him, but like, what's the value of getting the fifth year if the players have determined it's irrelevant?
Yeah, correct. And you know, there's really no urgency to get the deal done because he is under contract for two more years. And in theory, you could slap the franchise tag on him in a third year here. So you do have, you know, still the control in that situation. And again, I get what he's trying to do at the moment. But then I think the thought process is, okay, if you sit out 2 weeks, what did you accomplish? If you sit out seven practices, what did you really accomplish? Mm-hmm. And you know, we talked to Mike Brown last week at the media luncheon, and he said he wants to get something done. But he did say, you know, hey, these things are usually done in the off season. Well, the off season's pretty much over. And I just don't see, again, when there's no sense of urgency, I just don't see the Bengals budging in this regard. And I just don't know what Lamar's leverage is, again, unless, and this is a big unless, because I don't think he goes to this stage, unless he's prepared to sit out regular season games.
Not a fun sort of topic for Dan Pitcher, who was just promoted to offensive coordinator, to try to parse through, as he is now in that replacement role now that Brian Callahan has gone to Tennessee as the head coach. As far as the expectations, Richard, do you have for any adjustments here to offensive play calling? You have Pitcher, who's been in the organization since 2016. What's been the early reports as far as any tweaks, anything different we should come to expect based on how Zach Taylor has said, going back to basically January and February, he would really be willing to hand over the keys of the car of the offense to a new OC and Dan Pitcher?
Yeah, when we got a chance to talk to Dan at the NFL scouting combine and kind of just, you know, ask him what his general plan was, he said, I need to find a way to create more big plays. This offense really lacked in that department last year. Not just big pass plays, but you know, big plays in the run game. And, you know, they let Joe Mixon go because he wasn't a big play guy in the run game. And they think Zach Moss and Chase Brown will be. And he also talked about wanting to use Ja'Marr Chase in the slot a little bit more to create some mismatches. You know, the whole offseason narrative was, who's going to replace Tyler Boyd in the slot? And the answer was, well, it might come by committee with Chase playing the slot some, maybe Andre Yoshivash, maybe the rookie Jermaine Burton, and they've all moved all over the place. Probably the only static receiver you would see is T. Higgins staying on the outside. And so I think that's where the creativity comes in. But if you're Dan Pitcher, one of your creative tools was to see what Ja'Marr Chase looked like more in the slot. You haven't gotten a chance to do that yet.
Well, I mean, look, when you know, it's funny. Everybody said, how are they going to replace Tyler Boyd? But then when you break down what Tyler Boyd did for the team, I mean, like, seriously, it's like he had 98 targets, 67 catches, 6.8 yards per target. He only had 28 first downs. I think they have to move Chase around and utilize the matchups on him because he controls double teams on every single play. And if you line them up just at X, the defense can set up. And I think that's one of the reasons, because they're in such an 11 personnel team, it's hard to. And with Mixon having no ability to really to be explosive in the run game, you know, you didn't have to load the box up and you could roll the coverage into Chase. And next thing you know, there's no big plays. But what about this offensive line? Where are they going to be at right tackle, do you think, when they welcome the New England Patriots into Cincinnati?
I think they'd like it to be Trent Brown, but Trent hasn't practiced yet. You know, obviously the eventual long term is Amarius Mims, who they drafted in the first round. But I wrote this, you know, before camp began, and it just kind of hits you as a stark thing. You know, Trent Brown has 93 NFL starts under his belt. He does have some flaws. It's why he was on the market. It's why he wasn't overly expensive on the market. But he has 93 NFL starts. Amarius Mims has 8 college starts. And so you tell me who you'd like to line up at right tackle in that opener. I think you'd like it to be Trent Brown. But I will say Amarius has had a nice camp. They don't put the pads on until tomorrow, so we'll see more when the pads go on. I talked to Sam Hubbard yesterday, and Sam's going against him a bunch in camp. Sam got him on a good move once, but he said, hey, the kid's really good. He gets his hands on you. You have a hard time disengaging him. And so I think they'd like Amarius to evolve into being that guy at some point. I just don't know if it would be in the opener unless it's by default.
He is Richard Skinner talking some Cincinnati Bengals preseason outlook with us right now on the Lombardi Line. Follow him at Local 12 Skinny. One thing we were talking about earlier, Richard, just breaking down individual positions, whether it's O-line or secondary. There's a lot of disagreement from the general market, a lot of different publications who do the position-by-position rankings as to where these different elements of the Bengals fall in. Secondary, great example. I've seen anywhere from top 15 to bottom 5 secondary with new additions, but also struggling young corners going back to last year. If I'm asking you, okay, pick either top 15 or bottom 10 group, where are you most inclined to lean right now at this stage with that new built secondary?
I'll go top 15, and it's probably more on potential. I do think Cam Taylor-Britt is a really good outside corner. Mike Hilton's a terrific slot corner, so you can start with those positives. Geno Stone had a great last year in Baltimore, but was that a one-year wonder, or was that just Geno Stone finally evolving into a really good player? They brought Von Bell back. Von's looked really good in camp, but, you know, you're also looking at a safety who's into his 30s now, who's been very physical, plays a physical position. They want Von, I think, to start to set a tone and show some leadership. They've got Jordan Battle behind him, who started some as a rookie last year. He kind of hit the rookie wall. One corner who's really looked good, and he's in a battle with Dax Hill, who's converting from safety, has been DJ Turner, the second-year corner. He kind of faded his last year, went along, he hit that old rookie wall. And really struggled. But boy, so far in camp, he's looked the part. He has about 2 or 3 PBUs each and every practice, and he's always around the football. So it's a good start to camp for him. And we'll know more again when they put the pads on. You can see the corners and defensive backs put their hands on some receivers too.
How does Joe Burrow look? What's his arm strength look like? How's the ball seem coming off his hand?
It's not being spun the way it used to spin. And I think that's the next step, is to see if he can get it back to that. But I will say, you know, he's on time, he's accurate, he makes quick decisions. That all that helps. The deep ball looks fine. You see, he threw one yesterday to Trent Irwin on a really good double move and literally dropped in the corner, actually, good coverage, dropped it right in the bucket. But he's even admitted he's not spinning it the way he used to at this point. And then maybe that's to be understood because of the timing of coming back from the wrist injury. But he's looked really good to this point. He's only had one day off, and it was a planned day off last week, the third day of 3 practices. I'm going to guess he'll probably take tomorrow off because it's the third day of the next 3-day tranche of practices. So he's looked good. It's not where it probably will be and where it has been in the past.
Really good breakdown from Richard Skinner with us on our Progressive Guest Line from Local 12 in Cincinnati. Really appreciate it, Richard. Best of luck here. As you guys know, it's always that fun time. A lot of long hours just hanging out, watching a bunch of guys do a whole lot of nothing at training camp. But appreciate the time and the insights.
You bet. Take care, Bill.
All right, when we come back, Michael, it is time for hour number 2. We'll go into what is on Michael's mind. It is the week of preseason games, Hall of Fame game coming up Thursday, Houston and Chicago. We'll hear also the soundbite from Mike Brown on the other side of Cincinnati. That is all still to come. Hour number 2 next on the Lombardi Line.